I suspected my wife was planning a divorce, so I moved my assets. 2 weeks later, she filed, then backtracked when her plan backfired. Hello everyone, before we start today's video, I need your help. We've noticed that the channel is losing traction, and subscribing is one of the best ways you can help us. It's quick, free, and allows us to continue bringing you great content. Your support means everything. Let's keep this channel growing together. Thank you very much. Now, let's begin the video. Hello people. I've been skimming through the posts here for a while, believing I'd never have my own tale to tell. However, life has a way of shocking you, and I've been lugging this about for months. I need to let it out. Let me be clear, I've never been the sort to jump to conclusions or assume the worst. My wife, let's call her M, and I have been together for 6 years and married for 4. Things were solid, or so I thought. We experienced the typical ups and downs, but nothing that made me think, oh, there's a problem here. In reality, throughout the majority of our relationship, we were that couple, completely committed colleagues. We laughed at stupid inside jokes, argued for hours about which movie to watch, and had a cadence that just worked. She'd organize elaborate date nights, and I'd treat her to her favorite takeout after a long day. It felt effortless. As if we had figured out the whole love thing. That is why what occurred next struck me like a ton of bricks. The shift around 6 months ago, things began to alter. At first, it was minor details. Things you'd likely miss if you weren't paying attention. She began carrying her phone everywhere, even when she was only going to the kitchen or folding clothes. Before this, her phone would sit on the coffee table for hours, and she didn't mind who picked it up. One day I made this joke. What, are you running some secret spy ring now? She chuckled and added, no, work's been emailing me a lot. Okay, fine. But, a few days later, she created a password. That one caught me off surprise because she had never used it before. When I casually inquired why, she responded something vague about security and hackers. I didn't press it since I didn't want to appear paranoid, but it simply felt off. And it did not end there. She began taking calls outside the room, which she had never done before. It wasn't subtle either. Her phone would ring, and she'd say, oh, let me just grab this real quick, before disappearing into the bedroom or outside on the porch. If I inquired who it was, she would just say, just a friend from work. Then I noticed a new habit. Keeping her phone face down on the table. I had no idea that was a thing until I reached over to give her something and she hastily moved her phone out of the way. It was one of those blink and you miss it moments, yet it stayed with me. Growing distance. However, it wasn't all about the phone. She started to feel distant. Conversations that used to flow easily now felt like pulling teeth. If I brought up future plans, such as where should we go for our anniversary? Or, do you think we should start saving for a new car? She'd simply nod and say, yeah, we'll see, before shifting the subject. It all came together for me on a random Wednesday. She informed me that she was seeing a buddy for coffee after work. It didn't sound strange, she does that occasionally. I happened to be running errands in the same area, so I figured, why not surprise her? It will be cute. When I arrived, however, she was not with her friend. She stood outside the cafe, walking back and forth, her phone placed against her ear. I remained in my car because something about the way she spoke seemed serious. I didn't intend to eavesdrop, but I overheard phrases like, it's almost ready, and starting fresh soon. My stomach sank. I couldn't figure out what she was saying, but it didn't sound like job or friend conflict. It sounded grander, like something she had planned. When she returned home, I asked her how her coffee date went, attempting to maintain a casual tone. She told me a complete narrative about her pal complaining about her boyfriend. It was such an unexpected comment that I just gazed at her for a second. What do you mean? I inquired. She shrugged. I just think we should have everything in one place. You know, like all our account info, passwords, documents, that kind of thing, just in case of emergency. I wasn't sure what to say. This was something we'd never discussed before, and the timing seemed strange given everything else I'd noticed. What kind of emergencies? I inquired, attempting to keep my tone casual. She shrugged again. It's just smart, isn't it? What if something happens to one of us? Or what if we need to make a big financial decision quickly? Her argument made sense on the surface, but something about the way she expressed it made me nervous. It was too rehearsed and polished, as if she had been waiting for the appropriate time to bring it up. I nodded and murmured something like, yeah, I guess that's a good idea, but within, alarms were ringing. Why now? Why are we suddenly concerned about arranging our finances when we've always kept them separate and loose? That night, my mind kept reliving her words, attempting to figure out what it meant. Was this just typical adult behavior, and was I reading too much into it? But then I remembered the phone calls, the talk I overheard in the cafe, and how distant she'd been recently. It all began to mount up, and I did not like the image it was painting. Until then, I had done nothing about it. A few days later, she mentioned it again. We were in the kitchen, I was making a sandwich, and she was looking through her phone, when she remarked, "Have you thought more about organizing the bank stuff? Like, do you know where all the account details are?" I lowered the knife and turned to face her. "Okay, what's going on?" I inquired, attempting to keep my tone light but firm. "You've been bringing up the finances a lot lately. Is there something we need to talk about?" She finally looked up from her phone, astonished that I had pressed her on it. "No, nothing's wrong," she responded hastily, making me giggle. "I just think it's important, that's all, you know, for emergencies." "Emergencies? Like what?" She shrugged, her expression unreadable. "I don't know. Just life stuff. It's not a big deal. I promise, I just think it's something we should get on top of." Her response seemed ambiguous. Too vague. I nodded and let it go, but the way she avoided providing a direct answer made me even more suspicious. It didn't seem like a casual suggestion anymore. It felt like she was concealing something, but I had no idea what it was. So, the next day, while she was at work, I decided to look into our finances. I opened our joint account online and discovered something unexpected. Over the last month, a few tiny moves had taken place. Nothing large, but small quantities that did not appear to have a clear purpose. They were not designated for bills, groceries, or anything similar. I didn't want to jump to conclusions, but it appeared that she had been withdrawing money from the account for some reason, which I couldn't figure out. I considered addressing her, but something told me to wait. If I was wrong, I'd look ridiculous. And if I was correct, I had to be careful. It was eating at me, so I contacted someone I trusted, an old college friend who also happens to be a lawyer. I told him what I'd discovered while trying not to sound like a conspiracy theorist. "Look," he remarked after I'd explained everything. "I'm not saying something is absolutely going on, but you're not insane for wanting to be ready. If you're concerned about protecting your assets, now is the moment to do so. Better safe than sorry." He walked me through what I could do, simple procedures to ensure my finances were protected if something happened. I'll admit that taking such drastic action felt out of the ordinary. It felt like I was preparing for something dreadful even though I wasn't sure what was wrong. But the more I considered it, the more it made sense. If she was really up to something, and I was beginning to suspect she was, I needed to defend myself. It was not an easy decision to make, however. This wasn't just about money or assets. It was about the life we had created together. I kept repeating images in my head, our wedding day, the late-night conversations about our dreams, and the weird little jokes we shared. How did we arrive here? Is this what our marriage had come to? The prospect of taking these measures felt like conceding defeat, as if I was officially abandoning the trust we previously shared. That evening, while she was out, I sat at my desk and took out my laptop. My hand shook as I opened the computer and began browsing through everything: bank accounts, investment accounts, and the property deed. Each paper I studied felt like a betrayal, but a persistent voice in my head reminded me that this was about survival, not sabotage. I didn't mean to hurt her. I couldn't get rid of the idea that if I didn't act now, I'd regret it later. I compiled a list of everything I could transfer and how to do it without raising suspicion. As I typed, I felt a crushing weight settle against my chest. I had entirely trusted her for years, and now here I was, playing defense against the person I thought would always have my back. Then I called my mother and explained why I needed her help, but not in detail. "I need you to hold on to some things for me for a while. It's nothing bad, just something I need to do to protect myself, just in case." She was silent for a minute, likely trying to figure out what I wasn't saying. "Are you okay?" Her voice was filled with anxiety. "Yeah," I lied. "It's just a precaution, nothing to worry about." She didn't press me, but I could hear the pause in her voice when she responded. "Of course, sweetheart. Whatever you need." I hung up the phone with an odd mix of relief and shame. I despised engaging her in this mess, but knowing she had my back provided some steadiness in an otherwise chaotic environment. By the time Em arrived home, I had already begun the process. I moved the majority of my assets, our cash, investments, and even the house, to my mother's name. I kept enough in our joint account to keep up appearances, but the rest was locked down. She didn't notice anything. She walked in, kissed my cheek, and asked if I wanted to watch a movie. I appeared okay, but inside I was a wreck. Part of me felt awful, as if I had betrayed her trust. But another part of me felt relieved, as if I was finally gaining control of a situation that had spiraled out of my control. Over the next 3 days, I tried to maintain a normal routine. I didn't want to let her know that anything had changed. She appeared satisfied, even unusually cheery at times. However, rather than putting me at ease, it increased my suspicion. If she was plotting something, she did an excellent job of concealing it. What stood out, however, was that she never brought up the finances again, not even after I questioned her the last time. It was as if the subject had evaporated from her memory. At first, I believed I had overreacted, and she dismissed the subject since it wasn't relevant. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized she was avoiding it. Almost as if she was afraid to bring it up again after I pressed her. I noticed her staring at me a few times, as if she was assessing my mood or contemplating whether to say something. Every time I noticed, she'd quickly return her attention to whatever she was doing, her phone, the TV, a book. It was slight, but it was present. It felt like she was waiting for me to bring it up, as if she didn't want to push the issue again. The silence only made me feel more anxious. It wasn't like her to drop anything she considered essential, and the way she avoided it suddenly appeared deliberate. If she was testing the waters, she was not going in. If she was waiting for something, I was not about to give her the go-ahead. Whatever her next move was, I knew I had to be one step ahead. Something was coming, but I didn't know when or how. All I could do was prepare. That night, I made certain that everything was solid. I glanced over the paperwork again, double-checking every aspect of my mother's asset transfers. The house, the savings, the investments, everything was now legally in her name, sealed in an uncontested trust. I even called her to confirm that she had all of the necessary papers. 2 weeks had passed, and everything appeared normal, to normal, frankly. She was acting more loving, even starting to talk about unrelated topics like jobs or what we should eat for the evening. It threw me off because she'd been aloof for months, avoiding anything more than superficial conversations. Part of me began to question whether I had been overreacting all along. Maybe the strange conduct was merely stress or something I didn't comprehend. But then, one random Friday night, she sat me down on the couch, turned off the television, and said, "We need to talk." My stomach fell quickly. I knew what she was going to say before she did. "I think we should get a divorce," she replied, her voice so calm it seemed prepared. It wasn't furious or emotional, it was simply frigid, as if she had told me we had run out of milk. I stared at her, unsure how to respond as she explained her argument. She mentioned needing space, wanting to figure herself out, and feeling like she'd lost her identity in the marriage. Standard breakup phrases that didn't really explain anything. But then she said something that struck a different tone. "You know, I've made a lot of sacrifices for you over the years, and I don't think you really appreciate them. I deserve more." That last part stung. It wasn't just that she wanted out, it was that she framed it as if I owed her something, that everything was my fault, and she was simply claiming what was properly hers. As I sat there, trying to understand what she was saying, a new question arose. "Why now?" Then she said something that made everything start to make sense. "A friend of mine has been helping me see things more clearly," she continued, not looking at me. "A friend?" I remained still, letting her speak, but my mind was racing. Who was this friend? Why were they so involved in my marriage? The way she stated it was not casual. It seemed like someone had been hyping her up, convincing her that leaving me wasn't simply a choice, but a strategy she needed to implement. And the more she talked about how she deserved more because of her sacrifices, the more I became skeptical. Sacrifices? What kind of sacrifice? She was happy with me, or so she said. I worked hard to offer her the life she desired, and it wasn't just about money. When she asked to move closer to her job, I agreed, even though it meant a lengthier commute for me. When she wanted to attend that pricey yoga retreat last year, I made sure we budgeted for it, even foregoing a vacation I was looking forward to so she could go. I backed her when she changed careers twice, telling her it was fine to take the risk because I wanted her happy. I believed being a decent husband meant putting her first whenever possible. And it wasn't as if I was an unresponsive, distant partner. I showed up. I remembered birthdays and random things she had mentioned loving. When she mentioned feeling caught in a rut, I suggested date nights. I listened to her complain about her job, friends, and family. I didn't always get it right, but I did try. That's why her "I deserve more" line hurt so much. I didn't even consider buying it. She was not upset due to anything I did or did not do. She was upset because something had changed in her. Perhaps it was the acquaintance she kept bringing up, or something else. But the lady sitting in front of me was not the woman I married, and I was not going to let her rewrite our marriage tale to fit her new narrative. I didn't press her at the moment. Instead, I nodded and said something innocuous, such as, "If that's how you feel, I guess we should figure out the next steps." She seemed startled that I wasn't arguing or begging her to stay, but I didn't mind. My attention had already changed. I needed to know who or what was causing her sudden, planned shift in conduct. She didn't just wake up one day and decide she wanted out. This was something greater, and I wasn't going to let it surprise me any more than it had already. After that chat, she went into her own apartment, and I received the divorce papers on Monday. Let me tell you, they didn't only want to stop the relationship. They were planning to take everything, half the house, my savings, my assets, and the car. She wanted it all. Plus, some ambiguous spousal support clauses that made little sense given her high salary. It seemed as if she was expecting me to give her all I had worked for. At first, I assumed she was just being vengeful, but the way she articulated her demands, so specific and aggressive, reassured me that she had someone guiding her through this. So I started digging. I couldn't just ask her who she'd been talking to, so I had to be clever. I began with her social media. She hadn't blocked me, and even though she didn't post frequently, I searched through her tagged photographs and comments looking for someone new. That's when I discovered the pattern. Jake repeatedly liked and commented on her posts. Nothing obscene, but enough to make me pause. I clicked on his profile, which was public. At first glance, he didn't appear to be much more than a 30-year-old marketing professional. But as I scrolled down, I spotted something unusual. He posted a photo at the same cafe I'd seen her at weeks before, on the same day I overheard her discussing starting afresh. My gut churned as I continued scrolling. More subtle signals were a comment on one of her pictures that read, "You've got this," as well as a selfie he'd taken from what appeared to be her new residence. None of it was substantial evidence, but it was enough to raise my suspicion. I wasn't sure what to do with this information, but I knew I couldn't just sit there and wait for solutions to come my way. Her statement of a friend who helped her get through things remained with me, and I wanted to know who it was. I decided to contact one of our mutual acquaintances, Lisa. She and my wife had been friends for years, so she knew what was going on. I kept the conversation light at first, asking if she'd lately spoken with my wife or if anything seemed strange. Lisa reacted swiftly, saying she had no idea about the friend or any suggestions. I asked a few more probing questions, but she cut the conversation off defensively, claiming she couldn't help me. The entire situation felt rushed, as if she was trying to avoid becoming engaged. Not willing to give up, I called another buddy, Emily. I followed the same pattern, stating that I was simply trying to make sense of things. She was apprehensive at first, responding vaguely to my questions. When I pressed her more, she quickly ended the call, leaving me even more skeptical than before. I sat there, frustrated, trying to figure out my next move. Then, to my astonishment, Emily called back. She told me she needed to make sure what she said didn't come back to her. I assured it wouldn't, and after a long pause, she revealed what she knew. Apparently, my wife had been spending a lot of time with someone named Jake, whom she had met at work. Emily claimed she didn't know much else, but from what she'd heard, Jake was very active in the divorce advice my wife was receiving. Hearing that name felt like a puzzle piece fitting into place. It was evident that this was more than just her need for space or to find herself. Someone else was in the picture, directing her decisions, and I was eager to discover why. I chose to confront it in my own manner. That Saturday, I headed to her apartment building and parked a block away, trying to confirm what I already suspected. A few hours later, she and Jake stepped out of the building. They did not hold hands or anything, but the way they walked together, close, leaning in to talk, was plenty. They got into his car and drove away, leaving me sitting there, staring at the spot where they had been. I did not follow them. I did not need to. At that point, it was evident she hadn't simply stopped loving me. She'd been preparing to go with someone else, and now everything made sense. The unexpected distancing, the money questions, the forceful demands, and the divorce papers. She wasn't simply abandoning me, she was leaving me with nothing, and she was accompanied by someone at all times. I went home that night, my head racing with everything I'd learned. The betrayal burned, but what hurt the most was how premeditated everything was. She was using the divorce as a stepping stone to whatever life she was creating with Jake. But she had no idea what I had planned for her. The first mediation session felt strained from the time we stepped in. Her lawyer arrived with a binder so thick that it appeared they were bringing a case against a Fortune 500 firm. He began listing her demands as if they were entirely reasonable: half the house, the money, my assets, the car, and even some gibberish about spousal support. I remained silent, seeming to listen, but I was waiting for my attorney to make his move. When it was finally our turn, he handed a stack of paperwork across the table and said, "Before we proceed, I think it's important for everyone to review these. Her lawyer took the papers and skimmed through them. His confident posture changed fast as he flipped through the pages, his brow furrowing harder with each one. "What is this?" he inquired, gazing at my lawyer. "These documents show the transfer of all major assets into a trust under my client's mother's name," my lawyer said calmly. "The transfers were completed several weeks before the divorce filing, and the trust is fully legal and irrevocable." The room became utterly silent. Her lawyer looked at her, confused and frustrated. "You didn't mention this," he stated flatly. She snatched the papers from his hands and flipped through them, her face flushing. "This can't be real," she said, staring at the notarized signatures and dates. Then she turned to me, her countenance changing from incredulity to rage. "You planned this?" she muttered, gazing at me as if I'd committed a heinous crime. "You knew I was going to file, and you set this up to screw me over." I did not respond. I just sat there and let her connect the dots on her own. Her lawyer, apparently agitated, requested my counsel to elaborate. So he did, slowly, deliberately, and with every piece of evidence necessary to make the transfers irrefutable. The dates aligned exactly, indicating that I had transferred everything well before she filed. The signatures were duly notarized, and the confidence was solid. There was nothing they could do to challenge it. She was furious. "You're unbelievable," she said, leaning forward in her chair. "I can't believe you'd do something like this to me." I still did not say anything. What was there to say? This was not about me doing anything to her. This was to defend myself because she had made it apparent she was not going quietly. The conference finished with her lawyer saying something about needing to rethink their strategy, but everyone in the room knew they had no further moves to make. When we walked out of the building, she took me aside in the hallway, her expression a mix of rage and desperation. "This isn't over," she added, her tone low. "You're going to regret this." I just looked at her and said, "I already regret trusting you. That's the only regret I have." Things escalated faster than I had anticipated following the mediation session. She went into complete meltdown mode almost instantly. It began with the calls, endless calls. At first, she appeared calm, even remorseful, leaving voicemails that began, "I think we just need to talk," or "I know this got messy, but we can fix it." When I did not answer, the tone changed. By the second day, her messages alternated between sobbing and screaming. One voicemail would be her lamenting about making a mistake and not wanting to lose what we had created together. Then she'd launch into a furious tirade accusing me of being stingy and cruel, blaming me for everything that was wrong in her life. I ignored it all. My lawyer told me not to engage, and I honestly did not want to. I was finished playing her games, but she was not. When the calls and texts did not work, she began telling stories. Mutual friends informed me that she had been telling people that the divorce was a hoax, and that it was all part of a larger farce. A prank? I mean, who would believe that? The flaws in her story quickly became apparent. Friends began to ask questions like, "If it was a prank, why did you file actual legal paperwork? Or, why hire a lawyer and make such specific demands if it wasn't serious?" When others didn't instantly accept the hoax justification, she doubled down. She said it was not a joke, but rather a test of our relationship's strength. She began casting herself as the victim, claiming that my reaction had hurt and betrayed her, that I had gone too far and broken our marriage's trust. At first, some individuals seemed to believe her stories. I'd get strange emails or comments from acquaintances like, "Wow, I didn't realize things were so rough for her." Even her brother lashed out, saying, "You should have just talked it out instead of being so drastic." It was annoying, but I knew the truth would eventually come out. And it did, due to a common buddy. Let us call him Matt. Matt and I were not particularly close, but we had always been nice. A few weeks after the mediation, he messaged me unexpectedly, stating he had something I needed to see. When we met, he brought out his phone and showed me a series of text messages between her and Jake. I was confused at first. "How did you even get these?" I inquired, scanning through the messages. Matt revealed that he and Jake shared a mutual buddy, who had heard their talks. Apparently, this common acquaintance had grown concerned about the way things were going, especially when Jake began gloating about how he was assisting her in securing her future. It didn't take long for that common buddy to figure out what securing her future really meant, trying to bleed me dry. Feeling awful about remaining silent, the buddy grabbed screenshots of the texts and sent them to Matt, believing he had a better relationship with me and could warn me. "This guy's been playing both sides," Matt replied, shaking his head. "He's been hyping her up to take you for everything while making her believe he'd be there for her afterward." Matt gave me the texts and said, "I thought you should know. You don't deserve this, man." The texts were terrible. She wasn't just ranting to Jake about the divorce. She was actively planning her future steps with him, and he was guiding her through them. A message she left read, "Once the settlement's done, we'll have everything we need. I just need him to agree to the terms." Jake responded, "Don't back down. Make him feel guilty if you have to. He owes you. We'll start fresh once you've got the money." I sat there, staring at Matt's phone and trying to understand what I was reading. This was neither a misunderstanding or an emotional response to a failed marriage. This was a cold, deliberate manipulation. I thanked Matt and he left, but my thoughts were racing. Everything made sense now: her abrupt isolation, her fixation with our finances, and her harsh demands throughout the divorce. It was all part of a plan, one she had been developing with Jake behind the scenes. The text soon circulated among our mutual friends. Matt shared them with a few friends, and they quickly spread. Her story suddenly ceased to be credible. People who had previously been indifferent or even supportive of her began to distance themselves, and the change was nearly immediate. People who had previously defended her or remained neutral suddenly recognized her for who she truly was. Even her closest allies started to distance themselves. By the time the divorce was finalized, she had only her personal things. Her lawyer quietly dismissed her complaint after recognizing there was no legal basis to stand on. All of those bold requests had crumbled under the weight of the documents I had produced, and the trust I had established with my mother was unbreakable. Jake seemed to vanish as soon as things began to unravel. I wouldn't be surprised if he used her as much as she did me. From what I could tell, he'd been feeding her fantasies of independence and a new beginning, but the moment it became evident she wasn't going away with anything, he was gone. Without Jake in her corner, her confidence plummeted. The calls and texts continued, but they became increasingly desperate. She was not accusing me anymore. She begged. "Can we just talk, please? I'll do anything to fix this," one voicemail stated. A different opinion: "You don't have to forgive me, but can't we just settle this and move on? I'll drop everything if you just talk to me." I did not respond. I could not. It was too late to reverse the harm. Even her family began to drift away. Her brother contacted me at one time, apologizing for some of the things he had said before when he believed her side of the story. "I didn't know what she was doing to you," he said. "I'm sorry I ever took her word for it. As for me, I received the house, my savings, and something I hadn't experienced in a long time. Peace of mind. My mother, as usual, was my rock. She arrived with buckets of paint and a list of suggestions to help me reclaim the area as mine. Now, life feels like it's mine again. No more second-guessing every small interaction. No longer feeling betrayed. Just peace. She is a chapter from my history that I no longer read. And the remainder of the story is entirely up to me to write."
Thank you for watching. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so and hit the notification bell to stay updated with more shocking real-life stories happening around you.